Our next speaker is Dennis Kopp. He's a USDA scientist with the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. He's also an ESA fellow, a long-standing supporter of the Women in Entomology Breakfast and students in general. One of Dennis's responsibilities has been to work with the NIFA and the USDA's diversity issues and diversity-related programs. So we're happy to have him here to talk about women in government.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate being here. I just want to say, wow, the stories, the things that were shared by the speakers previous to me really touched my heart. It was a outpouring of some of the issues where I think we as scientists can make some monumental changes in our system to make sure we are utilizing the talents and skills of all the people that we are working with. I guess I'd like to start off and just talk a little bit about the background here. World War II was a major game changer for women in the working force in the United States. The women at first served in many different aspects, as laid out on here. The nurses, we know that, but they moved into non-traditional roles at that time. It was really the first time our society saw that. They served in the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, which later became the WACS, and then the Navy had what it was called the WAVES. They also served as bomber shuttle pilots, and Rosie the Riveter was on posters all over this country. Very non-traditional roles for women. And this just was a shocker for our society. When the war ended, we found that it was really an international recognition of all the wonderful things and contributions that women had made to the war effort in all parts of the world and in all nations. And there was also, as the war ended, there was a major push to free up jobs for returning servicemen after the war. And we found at that time, many of these women who had taken on these new roles ended up going back to the hearth and to the nurseries and serving in the homes again as primary caretakers for children and families. We then saw in the 1970s a major change, and some of us have been lucky enough to live through that. And it was during that time an evolution in education occurred, and we saw women becoming students throughout the United States. Many of your mothers, many of your aunts, many of your colleagues, and many of you sitting in this very room here were in that particular group. That was the avant-garde that really brought women into this. And these numbers then were reflected by many of the speakers that that talked before me, Sharon's comments about people in academia and such. Let's see here. Well, I guess I think we covered most of that. I'd like to talk a little bit about demographics. Let's talk a little bit about some numbers associated with these changes. And I'd like to focus here on civilian women, civilians working in the government, doing science. Civilians in leadership positions. First of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about this crazy grade system that we have in the federal government. We have what's called general schedule positions, starting at number one and going up all the way to GS-13s, government schedules. And these are different grades at which people come into the government and they can move up through that career ladder within their various series. The highest GS grade is 15. And then there is the management level in government. It's called the Senior Executive Service, or SES, and that is the top leadership career level of government employees. In all grades, you might say, well, why did you start at 13 through 15? Well, most of the science that is done in the government is done in the GS 13 through 15 levels. These are the leadership levels that most scientists are hired in and aspire to. Some of our scientists go into the SES training and become SES members. In all grades in the federal government, there are 44% women in that. These are numbers that come from federally and from a report from a federal agency or from an agency called Federal Employed Women in Government. It's a private organization, and they did it in 2010, an EEO diversity report, and these numbers come from there. 44% in all grades, but as we go up in the GS ratings, and when we move into the SES management level, we see there is a continual reduction in the percentage of women in these particular grades. This is not different than academia or anything else, but it is true throughout the federal government also. If we take a look at just that highest grade, the SES level, in the federal government. And we take a look at the year, and there's a time bleed there from 1992 up through the 2000s where we have individual year data. We see a tremendous jump in that 1992 to 2003 era for all of the SES levels, and then a gradual increase, and today, in 2011, it is over 30% of the SES top leadership level career positions are occupied by women in the federal government. This is a trend that has begun, and we have every expectation that it will continue. We also expect that in a perfect world, we would have 44% in all the different levels of SES and of GS and SES training. Let's take a look at the type of government jobs held by women in the federal government. I think the first thing that I need to lay on the table is that the number one job of all federal employees is to provide services for public good. If an individual working in the federal government is not doing that, we shouldn't be paying his or her salary. That is the foundation of what all of the people working in the government are supposed to be doing. Now, the science opportunities in government, I'd like to say a few words about that. What are these science opportunities for both women and men in government? First of all, we see science research and the supportive roles for that research being held by individuals coming into the federal government and working in the various levels of GS and SES. We find them in the various federal agencies, and the federal agencies are in green, and since this is a government talk, we will spew it with a lot of acronyms that I will go ahead and recite for you. The first agency there, as far as doing scientific research and the support that hire a lot of people, many of them are women, is the Agricultural Research Service, ARS. Then there's the U.S. Forest Service, USFS. There is the Animal Plant Health and Inspection Service, which is called APHIS. There's the Department of Defense, and that, and Connie, which will follow me on the program, will talk specifically to that. But there is much research that goes on by them, but that's mostly in the arena of insects that relate to, let's say, human health, to our soldiers around the world, as well as to the facilities, the many facilities that they have. The CDC is the, I'm having a brain bubble here. What is that? Yes, Center for Disease Control. They have a major research and supportive role. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, also hires researchers and supportive roles throughout the country in many of their offices and such. The Department of Interior, many of the people working for the Park Service are doing either scientific research and supportive roles, or they're providing their outreach and education activities. The next area, National Institute of Health is also a major hire of scientific researchers, and many entomologists are looking at or find opportunities related to the harbor-borne diseases throughout the NIH facilities. Education and educating the public regarding federal programs and regulations is very much an internal extension service to explain to the general public what the different programs are that are helping them. And we find them in the in APHIS. We find the EPA having many of those, and also the Ag Marketing Service (AMS). It has the organic certification programs and many opportunities for hiring within that. And then there's the Natural Resource Conservation Service. Many of their programs also provide opportunities for hiring of scientists and such. The grants program and leadership activities of the federal government are done by people who have been trained in science. And the National Science Foundation is probably the largest hire of people, many of whom are entomologists that work in that particular area. The National Institute of Food and Agriculture is the agency I work with, and I would say we have probably right now about 7 or 8 people that have a trained background in entomology. And of those, 1, 2, 3, 4 of those are women. And the National Institute of Health is a major granting organization, and they hire a fair number of people in to work with their grants programs and granting systems. Also, there is the area of regulation development for public good. A number of agencies that do that is environmental protection agencies, and entomologists play a major role there. The Animal Health Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, many of the regulations there, the quarantines and such, they're developed by people. Many insects are involved in that. Entomologists are major players. The Ag Marketing Service with the organic program and the sustainability work that they do. And the grain inspection and packers and stockyard association is another agency of the federal government. You say, well, why would they ever have entomologists working there? Well, there is a big concern with public health in regards to animal inspection and carcass inspection and such, and there's a need for entomologists in that area. And then also, as one's career matures in the federal government, quite often you move away from the entomology area and you end up working in the supervision and leadership area for all of the activities associated with what was on the previous two slides. Now, what are the perks and positive aspects of working for the federal government? Let me just mention a few here. First of all, many leadership opportunities for contributing to the public good exist in the federal government. And regardless of how you are hired, you have opportunities to lead and make positive differences in those areas. In the federal government, in most agencies, there is a real strong emphasis on career ladders for women of science, and it is a major effort on the part of our federal government to get gender equity in those areas. And there also is a commitment to hiring talented professional colleagues, and you will find a tremendous number of talented professional colleagues if you have the opportunity to work in government. Terminal degree is not essential, which is a positive thing. We hire people with bachelor's and master's degree to work in the federal government, and many of these have entomological degrees. We have reasonable compensation and benefits for your public service. It's good working for the government. And there are many family-friendly workplace activities and programs that are supported by the different agencies. The alternative work schedules, teleworking, annual leave, family and medical leave, employee counseling and assistance, wellness programs, and dependent care programs. Okay, all right, we're about out of time here, right? Let me go ahead and just kind of finish up then. Let's talk about some of the challenges and such for careers in federal government. You have to realize policy versus science in decision-making is a very important thing. And to be honest with you, policy will outweigh science in many of these decisions. And you have to go into government understanding that that is the reality, and sometimes you have to live with it. In hard times, federal employees are viewed as a financial burden, and that's an uncomfortable feeling to have, yet it is a reality. Employee training and mentoring programs are easy targets as agencies downsize and cut budgets. Top-down management is a reality and a rule in the federal government. What the boss says is the rule, and quite often these are political appointees. Political leadership often distrusts government career people. And I would like to end with that and say that there is a summary component of this talk that will be in the published outcomes of this particular symposium. And I want to thank all of you for your attendance, and I want to thank the speakers before me, because they really laid the foundation for anything I had to say. Thank you much.